In today's show, we're talking NBA draft again, and I'm going to be joined by Max Carl, and we're talking Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Haliburton, Obi Toppin, Isaiah Joe, Nico Mannion, Desmond Bain, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. As I said, we're going to be covering off some more NBA draft prospects today with Max Carlin of the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. So let's go and bring Max in right now. Welcome to the show, Max Carlin from the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. Max, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so we had your co-host on last week. Now it's time to get your thoughts on some prospects in the NBA draft. So let's not waste any time and let's talk about some guys, as we do with all of these shows, players that you're a little bit higher on than others. And we'll start with Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky, a 20-year-old point guard who is 6'3", a guy that didn't really blow us away with his numbers in college. Like, how high are you on him? Is it... Are you giving him the Kentucky benefit of the doubt, or what do you think he can develop into in the NBA?
Yeah, Tyrese Maxey is a guy who's in my second tier and has been since the preseason. I think that one of the key things that a lot of people miss with him is his track record as a shooter. People are, I think, see that 3-point percentage from his freshman year at Kentucky, and it was not a good number. It was sub 30%. But his track record as a shooter is incredibly strong, not just to the point that I have cautious optimism, but that I'm actually quite confident in him being a pretty high-level shooter from three and mid-range. And so what that then plays into is an idea of him as a really, really competent three-level scorer. At Kentucky, he was a great, great guard finisher. He's incredibly strong, incredibly balanced. Has really, really special craft around the rim, just knows how to use his body to protect the ball, use the rim to protect the ball, and that comes together to be a really impressive guard finishing package. On top of that, he has an elite runner. Was actually constrained a bit at Kentucky. We didn't see that much of it, but was a pretty special guy from floater range in his high school days. So that all comes together as a really, really strong three-level scoring package for him. And then on the defensive end, I think he's a guy who's underappreciated as well, just because he didn't have the flashiest numbers at Kentucky, didn't post huge steal and block numbers, but really, really rotationally consistent as a team defender, just a smart guy who doesn't make a lot of mistakes there, brings a lot of impact, I think, even as a team guy, with well-timed stunts and digs and that sort of thing. And then on the ball, I think he moves really well laterally, tries very hard, is strong, has some positional versatility there that I think he didn't show as much at Kentucky as well. Really can kind of get into bigger players. So I think that he's just a really, really good two-way guard. Not going to be leading your offense. He's not that sort of developed pick and roll player, that high level reader of the floor, but as a complimentary guy, I think he brings a lot as a two way guard.
So you mentioned the shooting numbers. Like, the 83% free throw shooting is encouraging for 3-point projection, 120 free throw attempts, 113 3-point attempts, only 29%. But if you look at his AAU shooting numbers, of course, the stats I've got access to here are pretty limited, but it was 41% shooting on 3-pointers at 7 attempts per game. So that's encouraging. Now, you talk about him as a point guard type player. A name that comes to mind because of the Kentucky connection is Jamal Murray, who is a point guard in the NBA who doesn't generate huge amounts of assists. He's mainly there as a scoring point guard. I'm not saying that Tyrese Maxey is Jamal Murray at all, but in terms of that point guard who's not a high assist guy, who's not a set your offense up, run your offense type of a player, is that the archetype of a player that you think Maxey could become?
Yeah, I think Maxey fits very nicely into a situation where someone else, ideally a larger player like Nikola Jokic, is really the fulcrum of the offense, and he can get his offense attacking closeouts, attacking a tilted defense. If you say you have a bigger creator running pick and roll on the other side of the floor, he brings value as a cutter, as a guy who's, I think, a versatile shooter and will be able to shoot running off ball screens as well. So yeah, I think that role wise, yes, you're looking at a guy who's guard sized, but is not going to be, the center of your offense is not going to be Tyrese Maxey running a bunch of pick and roll. It's going to be Tyrese Maxey playing off of some other.
We all have that wall that we have to push through in the afternoon, whether it's a mental or physical barrier. We all have it. We all know that feeling, that 3 p.m. crash. With Built Go, we have your solution to be able to break through that wall. Built Go is the healthy replacement for your energy drink, but the energy isn't fake. It's lasting and it's natural. It comes in easy to take 1.5 ounce packages, put it in your briefcase, in your office drawer, in your golf bag, wherever it is. If you need that energy boost, Built Go is there for you. It is the best workout gel on the market. It is an energy gel that also combines with collagen protein. And the collagen helps promote joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So the stuff literally makes you look good and feel good. It is also loaded with beta-alanine, B3, B6, B12, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Comes in three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use that promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. I guess the hard part there is finding that other player, because there's only one Nikola Jokic almost in the history of the entire NBA. So finding that other guy to have that fit is interesting. Now, whether that's, that could be someone like LeBron James as a creator from the wing, but someone else who can run things. It's not always the easiest thing to find, but I obviously agree with that assessment that he can be that point guard size player, but working more as a scorer, finisher, rather than a creator and a guy that sets up and runs everything on this team. So in terms of you being higher on him, he's sort of mocked in the 10 to 15 range in a lot of spots. Would you go higher than that? Yeah, where are you looking at him in terms of draft value?
Yeah, I'm taking Maxey in the mid-lottery for sure. I think that complimentary package is just really, really complete for him. If this were a better class, if there were more guys I thought had serious creator equity, Maxey would not factor in that highly. But just kind of the nature of this class. And I do think that it's a really valid point that it's hard to find those bigger creators. But I do think that that's kind of where the NBA is trending. And there are more and more of those guys, from Ben Simmons to Jason Tatum to Nikola Jokic, LeBron, the list goes on. There are more and more of these guys.
The next guy that you want to talk about that you're higher on is someone that we haven't talked about yet on this show, so I'm excited to get into it, and that is Isaiah Joe, a guy that declared for the draft, withdrew from the draft, and then put himself back into the draft. The shooting guard from Arkansas, a really, really strong shooter, 21 years of age. He is 6'5" as a shooting guard. Now, people will look at the percentage from his sophomore season and say 34% from three is not great. He took almost 11 attempts from three per game. He hit 3.6 of them. He was a 41% three-point shooter as a freshman. And to me, the Isaiah Joe, I guess, reduction in his three-point percentage is the fact that he was just taking so many more harder shots, and the volume is what's more impressive, along with the 89% free throw shooting versus looking at 34% and going, that's not great. To me, the fact that he's bombing that much and the difficulty of the shots is what gives me real confidence in him being a top-level shooter in the NBA.
Yeah, Joe is a total gunner from three. Really one of the more prolific three-point shooters that we've ever seen in college basketball. And the freshman year where he had the high efficiency as well was really up there with your Steph Curry seasons, Jamal Murray's freshman year, some of the great three-point shooting seasons in college history. But I'm not too concerned about the percentages with Joe. I think he definitely needs to add core and lower body strength to stabilize them. He does need to rein in his shot selection a bit. I mean, he is very ambitious with his three-point shooting. But the sell to me beyond a guy who's really willing to launch, and that comes off the dribble, off screens, really tough attempts with a lot of range. But it's all of the ancillary skills with him that are really appealing. He is, to my eye, a really exceptional defender. He is very active off the ball as a team guy, makes a very strong impact. He is definitely overambitious at times, but he just makes a lot of plays rotationally as a help defender. And I think it's highly valuable. And then I think that on the ball, he's an underrated guy because he has really good footwork. He moves very well laterally. Strength will be an issue for him there, and I definitely worry about the translation of his on-ball defense because of his strength. But definitely a guy who, if he can add strength, can imagine that really touching a lot of aspects of his game and allowing him to become a very consistent shooter, a very strong on-ball defender, make his you know off-ball contests as a help defender even stronger. There's a lot of avenues to upside there with him, with some strength gains in an NBA strength and conditioning program.
So he averaged 1.5 steals across his 60 college games, which is obviously a really strong number. The 3-point shooting is there. The strength and the weight are a concern. I've got him listed here as 167 pounds, which is obviously pretty small for a guy that's 6'5". What else can he do offensively? Is there any creation? Is there any ball handling abilities there for him? Or is he just going to be a straight shooter? What's his dribble game like? Yeah, where does he fit into an offense that way?
Sure. He can self-create space for jumpers. He has a really good step back. He's got the Harden-esque double step back down. He's got really good footwork on that and just covers a lot of ground with it. In pick and roll, he is a pretty competent passer. I don't know that he really extends beyond pocket passes, but he's very comfortable throwing pocket passes. So not a lot of reads, but good with some reads. Just doesn't get to the rim a lot. I don't think that he's totally devoid of burst, but he can just get bumped offline due to his strength so often. He just never got to the rim either year at Arkansas, and that's a major concern. But a strong decision maker, a guy who can maybe run some pick and roll in the pinch, can at the very least get himself pull up jumpers that he hit at elite rates both his freshman and sophomore years. Even as the overall 3-point percentage dipped his sophomore year, he was still hitting pull-ups at an elite rate. So he's got a little bit of self-creation to him, but not someone who's going to be running your offense.
So where would you take him? Because he's a guy that's maybe end of the first round, second round player in a lot of places. Is he a top 20 guy to you, or where do you have him?
Joe is, just on the borderline of the top 20 for me. He's either 20th or 21st. I would take him that late teens, early 20s range.
So now let's talk about some guys who you're not as high on. And these are a couple of names that have appeared a few times on this podcast with the guests coming on, especially in this segment. We talk about players that people aren't as high on. The first one here is another Tyrese. It's Tyrese Haliburton from Iowa State. We talked about him yesterday as well. People know my thoughts or my concerns. So let's just have yours. Like, why are you more down on Haliburton?
I just don't buy any creation equity from Haliburton, really. The fact that he doesn't have the handle, burst, strength to get by anyone, and that then he doesn't have the threat to pull up, that he's not going to really threaten you as a finisher, either by getting there or finishing once he's there. Just a lack of strength and burst there, but also ambidexterity, I think, kind of flies under the radar since there are some more notable guys, but Haliburton was intensely right dominant as a finisher. I think his only lefty rim attempts at Iowa State were on putbacks. All rim attempts for him were very infrequent. So I don't think that he has the ability to threaten on the ball as a scorer, which then puts him into an off-ball role. And I view him as kind of a linking player, a guy who makes extra passes, who hits spot-ups, who relocates intelligently. And those things have value, and I think that they raise the ceiling of a team. But I'm just very skeptical of the overall value that's provided by playing that role. It's a sort of similar story on defense. I think he's a guy who is vulnerable defending on the ball and pick and roll. And he does bring a lot of value, again, as a playmaker off the ball. But the problem you run into there is if you're a weak 6'5", I'm a little skeptical of the team defense impact that you can really bring. So I think he's a good player. He's obviously a brilliant basketball intellect, but I just have a lot of skepticism that role is really conducive to high-level impact.
Yeah, that's echoing a lot of the things that I worried about with him. If he has to run things, his inability to get to the rim, his lack of strength, his, you know, self-creation is all a concern with me for Halliburton. And he has been the name that has cropped up the most out of everyone that I've had on in terms of being lower than consensus. So maybe in the end, consensus ends up being lower than what it began anyway, because everyone seems to be down on Halliburton because there are people out there who are considering him to be a guy that might go in the top five and might be this, you know, franchise point guard type, but I have pretty extreme skepticism that that's going to be the case. So, you know, we know that there's some point guard needy teams in the top 10, Detroit, the Knicks at 7 and 8 in particular. Would you, I think so much of it with Halliburton is fit, so I would hate it there, but say he would to go at number 6 to Atlanta and play off of Trae Young, is that a fit that would make sense? Is that too high for him?
I think it depends entirely on how Atlanta intends to play going forward. If they want to stick with the, like, Houston-esque usage of Trae Young, where he really is sort of the everything in that offense, and then you're just relying on guys to finish plays around him, then Halliburton makes a lot of sense as a guy who can amplify advantages, who can make good decisions, who will help to generate good shots once the defense has already been compromised. I think he makes a ton of sense then. I worry a lot defensively. Trae is someone you've got to hide. Halliburton then is his backcourt mate. What are you doing exactly with him to sort of optimize him as an off-ball playmaker? I guess the idea would be that DeAndre Hunter is going to be handling top perimeter assignments always. I'm a little skeptical of that. But I think that makes sense as far as top 10 homes go for him, like Atlanta, Phoenix, Washington. If you're going to take him that high, just somewhere where there are creators in place already. But I certainly would not take him as Atlanta. But it's less of a disaster potential than Detroit or New York.
The next guy to talk about here in terms of someone you're a bit lower on is another name that's cropped up quite a bit, and that's Obi Toppin from Dayton, a guy 6'9", 22 years of age, going to be 23 at the beginning of next season or a month or so into next season. As a power forward, I've talked about my concerns for him. Yeah, older as a draft class guy, inability to really move with his stiff-looking hips. Defensively, he's poor. Someone had an interesting comment to me here on one of my past videos, saying that if you look at starting NBA power forwards or guys that you're projected to get started minutes, you say, ask yourself this question. Could Obi Toppin play as good or better defense than these guys? Kevin Love, Larry Markkanen, Sabonis, Bertans, Blake Griffin, Mello, Julius Randle, Kyle Kuzma, or Michael Porter? Now, how bad is his defense? Because those are some pretty poor defenders in that group. Now, I would say that his offense isn't at the level of most of those guys, but is he just significantly worse than even those guys defensively?
I think the biggest problem with Obi defensively is that there's kind of nothing you can do with him. He's not a five and he's not a four. I think that the mobility concerns are often reduced to the idea that he can't defend individually on the perimeter. And I think that it runs a lot deeper than that in reality. I think that this is a guy who's so immobile that he truly can't stunt and recover in time. And that is pretty disastrous when you consider on a play-by-play basis how many little movements a defender is supposed to be making in a team construct. I think that that's pretty damaging with Obi. And then thinking just more broadly, I just don't know how you go about extracting any sort of positive value from him defensively, short of playing him in a zone, really, just because of his issues backpedaling and then jumping out of a backpedal. I think that people assume that he's some great vertical athlete in all senses because he is so good vertically on the offensive end. But it's very important to remember that there are differences in how vertical comes. And for Obi Toppin, vertical out of a backpedal, which would be relevant in something like a drop coverage, is a real struggle. So I don't think that it's really viable to be playing him as a center. The mobility issues make him not viable as a four. So I just don't really know what you do with him. I don't know how you build a team around him. I think there are very few guys that are sort of that big man complement to him. So I think it just really, really egregiously compromises you from a team building standpoint outside of, or to a much greater extent than these other sort of weak defensive fours.
So we know it would be a disaster for him to go at number five to Cleveland, which has been heavily talked about. But now, how disastrous is it if he's a top 10 pick, if he's a lottery pick? Or would you just have him look just not even close to that area?
I think if you're in the rare situation that you have a perfect complement to Obi Toppin, that you could take him pretty high because there is a lot of offensive value there. I'm generally a bit low on him because I think that in addition to the defensive issues, that he's sort of a fundamentally complementary offensive player rather than another one of these rare hub guys. So I would 10 would be a little high. That's probably the absolute top end of his range for me. But yeah, if you're in a rare situation where you have someone like, say, Porty, if you're in that situation, I could definitely see taking him as high as something like 10. But just so few teams are in that situation because those perfect complements are intensely rare.
Yeah, that's the thing, is finding that right guy to pair with him. And then do you want to be investing in building your team around a guy like Toppin when perhaps he's not that good, really, in the end of things? And some of the offensive stuff is impressive. I still have some worries about his three-point shot. I want to hear your take on this because, look, he shot some really good three-point numbers, but the attempts aren't huge, and the free throw shooting's not spectacular, 70% over 2 years in college. How convinced are you that he can be a high 30s three-point shooter?
I think he can be a good shooter, a solid combination of volume and efficiency. I just am skeptical of real versatility with him. I think everyone's seen that shot against Kansas, the step back pull up. That's not in his game. He didn't shoot pull up jumpers this year. He's not a guy who's sprinting off screens like Karl Towns. So I think that he has some value as a pick and pop big man for sure. And I think that in concert with his ability as a role man does make him a really interesting option as a dual threat role man. But I don't think that he's some special big man shooter by any means.
Let's talk about another couple of guys here to round out the show. And first one of those we're going to talk about is a point guard from Arizona, originally from Italy. A couple of shows back, I said he was from France. Obviously got that one wrong. He's from Italy, Arizona. Now, Nico Mannion, the 6'3 point guard. He's 19 years of age. Mannion averaged 14 points with over 5 assists, 1.2 steals, shot 33% from 3. A guy that's sort of a back-end first-round type of a point guard. I feel like his college season was probably a little bit disappointing considering some of the hopes some people had for him heading into the year. Is he a guy that is a high-end NBA backup? Could he push to be a starter? Like, what are your thoughts on Mannion?
I think that he's kind of another guy that fits this mold of maybe guard size player who needs to be alongside another creator. I think that in bench units, a guy who maybe has more of a more leading a unit equity than someone like Maxey. But a lot of the most appealing aspects of Mannion to me are off the ball, that he is, for my money, the best off-ball relocator in the class, that he's just really, really smart with after he gives the ball up, just relocating, getting himself open, and he has that versatile shooting to capitalize on that. Just generally a very, very intelligent player, and that shows up on both ends of the floor. But lacking in strength and burst to really be breaking guys down off the dribble, doesn't have a handle like that. Kind of pretty reliant on the ball and tough shot making as a pull-up shooter. Doesn't really get to the rim, really reliant on his runner and contact averse there. So I think he's another guy who fits in as playing more off the ball alongside a bigger player. And in a perfect context, again, someone like playing off of a Ben Simmons or something like that, I could see, Nico Mannion, if he hits a high-end outcome as a shooter, definitely sliding in it as a starter in the perfect context, but more of a rotational guard who has some role versatility.
His assist numbers are intriguing because often in college you don't see players with high assist numbers. Over 5 per game in 32 minutes is a pretty strong number. What's his passing and vision like, or are these just some cheap type assists?
Now, he's a very, very skilled passer. He is highly intelligent with very good vision, has a really nice feel for probing baseline, and can throw off a live dribble with both of his hands. He is a genuinely very smart passer, and in a sort of off-ball role where he's getting to attack situations where he's having advantages created for him if he's attacking a closeout or coming off an off-ball screen. I think that he can be trusted to make very good decisions. And I mean, beyond that, truly manipulate the defense into creating some really good shots. He's a very legitimately good passer.
The last guy I want to talk about here is another guard who's projected around that end of the first round type area, and that Desmond Bane out of TCU, a shooting guard, 6'6", 22 years of age, so on the older end of things. A guy that averaged 16 points per game and legitimately elite shooting numbers, 43% over his entire college career, 44% last season on 6.5 attempts per game. Of course, he's a four-year player. So that shooting is obviously impressive. He also had some good rebound numbers, some strong assist numbers, some good steal numbers. As you'd expect seniors to do, he really put up some big, big numbers across his final season in college, and didn't do it on extraordinarily high usage, just 24% after being under 20% his first 3 years. So with Bane, those numbers are all good. Is it a matter of, hey, he really just exploded because he was older and more experienced than everyone in college? Because those first couple of seasons aren't overly impressive. Or is he a legitimate rotation guard who's going to be a high-level NBA shooter?
Yeah, he is an NBA rotation guard. Just a really, really good player. Like you said, highly reliable shooter with versatility, can self-create for sure, can shoot off the move, really sprint into shots, has range. Really smart team defender, totally reliable there. I worry a little bit about him on the ball. He's just pretty stiff and immobile, but has strength to get into guys, does try. Just a very solid all-around player. He really emerged in his senior year as a playmaker. He makes impressive reads on the ball, and he's not going to be a guy who's playing with the ball in his hands in the NBA. Just not that level of athlete. Not going to be really getting to the rim like that. And sort of despite his frame, doesn't play super physically on offense. Not a guy who barrels his way to the rim. But for a role as an off guard, definitely has plus playmaking to go with really, really reliable team defense. He's a very good player.
Bane is a guy, again, the shooting numbers are impressive, but I worry about the free throw rate because it was comically low. 13% free throw rate last season, and it went down in the last 2 years in college from 18 down to 13. Is he not a good finisher? Does he not try to attack the rim? Is he just shooting jumpers? Like, why is that free throw rate, which is a troublingly low number, why is it so bad?
Yeah, if you think about Bane not in the context of what he looks like physically, and more along the lines of some just recent college combo guards who projected to be more off-ball shooters in the NBA, thinking Landry Shamet, Ty Jerome, he is very similar from a profile standpoint to those guys. He's not a physical player in spite of his frame. He's not a bursty player. He has a lot of issues as a finisher. He is highly contact averse, very, very short arms. He just, is not going to be a high volume rim attempt guy ever. But that's not going to be his role in the NBA. He is not going to be a guy who's playing with the ball in his hands. He is an off guard. And then I think when you consider him in that role, then you're totally comfortable with him attacking closeouts. He's no longer a guy who's going to be relied upon to break down the defense with the ball in his hands. And then you take from that role that he did play in college some really competent playmaking, and I think it translates very well to making decisions on those closeout attacks. So I think he's a guy who's going to scale down, but he should scale down very well in a way that kind of mitigates what were his biggest issues in college.
He's an interesting one, and a guy that's mocked pretty often at the end of the first round because of that shooting ability as a decently sized shooting guard. So I think that'll do it for us today. Max, thank you for coming on. And of course, tell everyone what you guys are doing over on the Prep to Pro NBA Draft podcast.
Yeah, we put out technically weekly episodes, but we really do about twice a week usually. And in the lead up to the draft, we were frequently upping it to three. And then we're also going to be broadcasting live during the draft on Twitch. We're going to be doing a little, hopefully, replacement show for the typical cable broadcasts. So check that out. Follow the pod at Prep2ProPod on Twitter. And you can check me out at Max A. Carlin on Twitter.
go and follow Max and subscribe to his podcast. He's in Ben's podcast as well, Prep to Pro Draft podcast. Some great stuff over there. Max, thanks for coming on the show with me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that brings us to the end of today's show. Make sure that you are checking out the description below or in the show notes here, because I have got a link in there to the new Discord server. Lots of people in there talking fantasy basketball, so jump in there. Also, a link to vote for the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast as the podcast of the year, so go and do that. And if you want to join a fantasy league coming up, there is also a link to that in the show notes. Matt and Brendan over at Fantasy Basketball International running a bunch of really, really great leagues, so if they're the leagues that you want to be in, they are the leagues you want to be in, so I highly suggest go and make an application over there, because they have some high quality leagues, different formats, great stuff for those guys over there. Don't forget, guys, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment down below, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.